How was your weekend?
Good.
Good. So, are we ready to start?
We are. I think Michael Dustin is given a formal lecture.
Oh, okay. All right, so we're going to continue today. It'll probably be the almost the last lecture on hidden variable no-go theorems. So I'm going to be talking more about contextuality. And then for the rest of the week, we'll be on to more common interpretations such as Bohmian mechanics and collapse theories, and we'll end with the Everett interpretation. So last time we talked about non-contextual hidden variable models and how you couldn't have a non-contextual hidden variable model of quantum theory. Today I'm going to talk about a more general notion of non-contextuality. So one thing you might have noticed about the traditional notion that we talked about last time was that it applied only to projective measurements. It said if you have a projective measurement, it should be assigned a value. Every projector should get 0 or 1, which tells you which outcome would occur if you did that projective measurement. But you might ask, well, what about these POVM measurements we saw in the first week? Can we have a non-contextual model for those sorts of things? Can we have a notion of non-contextuality for them? Secondly, these measurements were assumed to have deterministic outcomes if you condition on the ontic state. Right? So the ontic state lambda is meant to be a description of all the hidden variables, and the assumption was that if you tell me all the values of the hidden variables, then there'll be a definite outcome for the measurement. But you could also question that. You could say, well, why not have measurements which, even once the hidden variables of the system are specified, there might still be some randomness in the outcome of the measurement. Maybe that would help you explain the quantum statistics. And then the third problem was that the way I provided the definition and the traditional way of doing it, it applies only to quantum theory. It was a statement about how we should model the outcomes of measurements in quantum theory. We should associate projectors with values. But if you look at the definition that Bell had for locality, it didn't make any reference to quantum theory. It was locality, or local causality more technically, was something that any theory could either obey or disobey. And so the nice thing about tests of Bell inequality violations is that even if quantum theory tomorrow is found to be wrong, those tests will still say, look, all those theories of the world that admit of local hidden variable models, they're ruled out. So even if quantum theory is not true, whatever theory is going to replace it will have to be a theory that does not allow for local hidden variable models. So it would be nice to have a similar notion of non-contextuality, which would not be so dependent on quantum theories, that we could say of any operational theory, the kind that we talked about in the first week, if you just tell me what the statistical predictions of your theory are, then we should be able to say whether it admits of a non-contextual hidden variable model. If you have that kind of notion, then not only could you say for any given operational theory whether it admits that kind of model, but you could say of any particular set of experimental data, you've got a few preparations and a few measurements, you've collected some data, then you could analyze that data and say, does that data admit a non-contextual model? And just as there are these practical applications for violations of Bell inequalities, there are also some practical applications for not having a non-contextual model. And so if an experimentalist says, I've got this experiment, I think it's highly non-classical, then you can say, well, is it non-classical in the sense that it doesn't admit one of these kinds of models? Because if so, then maybe, you know, we can use it for some interesting purposes. So that's the motivation for having a more general notion. So yes?
You mentioned something like every proof of non-contextuality being a proof of you know, Bell's theorem.
Vice versa. So if I have a violation of Bell inequalities, then that's a kind of non-contextuality. It's a dependence on contexts that are remote.
So could we not derive a more generalized non-contextuality from Bell's notion?
Well, it's you can certainly have a narrower notion. You could say in those cases where the dependence on context is a remote. A remote context, then we could use Bell's notion of local causality and apply it to any theory. But what we really want to do capture here is a notion of does my representation depend on even local context?
Right.
So we kind of want to take a page out of Bell's book, see how he did it for local causality, and try to do the same thing even when the context is not space-like separated from the measurement. Okay. So this lecture is really going to be about wedding the things we did in the first week with the things we did in the second week, connection between operationalism and realism. So remember that any realist model, the target is going to have to be to reproduce the predictions of the operational theory. So if I have a preparation procedure, then the way I'm going to model that in the realist model is I'm going to posit some space of ontic states. Here I've just drawn it as a one-dimensional space, but it could be arbitrary. And for every preparation procedure, I have to have some distribution over those states, characterizing what I know about the ontic state of the system, given that it was prepared in this way. And similarly, the way we model measurements, the most general way we can imagine modeling a measurement, is to say that it reveals something about the properties of the system. And so you've seen this before. You know, here's again the ontic state space. Each outcome of this measurement, I imagine it has three in this case, is associated with a conditional probability. So this is the probability of getting outcome one, given that the ontic state was lambda. And it could be indeterministic, meaning that for some values of the physical state of the system I feed into the vise, it might have some probability of getting outcome one and some probability of getting outcome two. And then, of course, if I want to reproduce the predictions of that operational theory, then I should get them by taking the conditional probability of outcome k times the probability of lambda, integrating over lambda. So here I haven't assumed quantum theory. I've just said, you know, any operational theory will be described in terms of preparations, measurements, and some statistics, probabilities for outcomes giving preparations and measurements. And it doesn't have to be the quantum predictions. It could be some other theory entirely. For all those theories, I could ask whether this sort of model is possible. And so far, I've put so few constraints on the model that it's always possible. I can always explain these statistics in this sort of way. Now, here's going to be the spirit of the constraint of non-contextuality expressed in this language. It's going to say that an operational theory or a realist model of an operational theory is a non-contextual model if operational equivalence of two procedures implies that they should be represented in the same way in the realist model. So I need to say more about what I mean by operational equivalence, but we saw a lot of this in the first week. Cases where, you know, if I were to put these two procedures in a black box and not tell you which one I was giving you, there would be nothing that you could do to distinguish them. So for example, you know, two measurements that give all the same statistics for all possible preparations. So let me give you an idea, a clear idea of what that means. So imagine you've got some operational theory, not necessarily quantum mechanics, and that theory allows you to do a whole bunch of different preparation procedures, a whole bunch of different measurements. Yeah, here's a sampling. And now you can start sorting these into equivalence classes, equivalent with respect to the statistics they generate. So you could take these two procedures here, for example. Take the first one, put it in front of every possible measurement, calculate the statistics. So for every measurement, you do a whole lot of runs, and you calculate the statistics over the outcomes. And then you move on to the next measurement device, you calculate statistics. And so you get a long list of you know, what this will predict for each measurement. And then you do it for this guy. And if you find that they give the same statistics for every measurement, then you say they're in the same equivalence class. If I were to put one of these two in a black box and ask you to figure out which it was, you couldn't do it. Because no matter what measurement you followed it up with, you would get the same statistics for both. And similarly, you know, I could sort the rest of them into equivalence classes as well, say like that. And so now the technical definition is that if for all measurements and all outcomes, the probability of outcome k given a preparation in the measurement is the same as the probability given some other preparation p prime, then I'll say that p and p prime are operationally equivalent. And I'll denote it p similar equal to p prime. So these guys here, which will differ in equivalence class, these leftover differences I'm going to call differences of context. Okay, so what is a context in this approach? It's anything you can change in your preparation procedure which doesn't change which equivalence class it's in. So there are trivial kinds of context, like if I change I repaint my Stern-Gerlach apparatus red rather than blue, that shouldn't influence the statistics, so that's a change of context. But there are more interesting kinds of changes of context. So here's an example. Suppose I'm in quantum theory. Then I know that the different equivalence classes are associated with different density operators. If I change the density operator, there'll always be some measurement that will see that change. It'll give different statistics. But now, how can I change a context? Well, here's a way. If we know that if I do an equal mixture of the zero state and the one state, That gives me the same statistics as an equal mixture of the plus state and the minus state. Those are two ensembles that give the same density operator and therefore give the same statistics. But they correspond to really different things that you do in the lab. Like I could flip a coin and prepare something Z spin up or Z spin down, so my apparatus is oriented Z up or Z down. Or alternatively, I could orient it X up or X down and flip a coin to decide which it is. That's not a trivial difference like the color of the paint. It's, you might have expected that that would make a difference at the hidden variable level. Or you know, you might posit it that it makes a difference to the statistics even. So it's sort of surprising when we do this and we say, hey, the statistics really don't depend on which of those two procedures I did. The idea of non-contextuality is that the way you explain the lack of dependence of the statistics on that change is that the properties of the system are exactly the same. The distribution over those physical states is exactly the same. And that's why the statistics are the same. Here's another example we talked about. Different ways of purifying the mixed state identity over 2 could be 0, 0, plus 1, 1, or 0, plus 1, minus, two different entangled states, two different things you do in the lab. And you would get all the same predictions if you just measured the first system. Yes?
Is this related to the previous? What was on the previous slide?
This here?
Is it related?
Not exactly, because here I could imagine doing these two preparations by flipping coins. And here I'm doing things coherently. I'm preparing two systems entangled in two different ways, and then I'm just ignoring the second half. Now, let's say I prepared this guy. I could always generate either one of these ensembles in the following way. I could go to the second system, which is now entangled with the first. I can measure it in the 0-1 basis. And then that would collapse the first system to either being 0 or 1 with equal probabilities. But I could also measure it in the plus-minus basis. And that would collapse the first system to being plus or minus with equal probabilities. So this is a different kind of context, the way that you entangle your system with another one. Other questions? Yes? Yeah?
Exactly the same thing out because it's just up to a matter of your definition where the z-axis is or x-axis.
But we're imagining that the measurements include let's say like both the preparation and the measurement device have access to that z axis. So I can measure along z, and then I expect that as I change from preparing an equal mixture of z up and z down to preparing an equal mixture of x up and x down, my measurement hasn't changed. It's still picking out the same z axis. So it's you're right. If I'd gone from this state to this state and simultaneously changed my measurement from z spin to x spin, then it would have been sort of trivial that I shouldn't see a difference. But here I'm imagining the measurement stays the same. And despite the differences between these guys, I don't see any differences in the statistics. Yes?
So the kind of non-contextuality that we're trying to get at is that if, so the realist model underlying, say, P1 and P4 mm-hmm. should actually be the same physical state for these two different density operators.
Exactly.
Now I can think of, somebody hiding inside this preparation box.
Okay.
And
small person.
Yeah, small person. And producing X polarized along the X direction, and just throwing out a spin up and spin down mm-hmm. equal probability. Mm-hmm. Or I can imagine another small person doing the same thing, but along the z-axis.
Yes.
Now, for me, this is like those two things should be very different, right? So.
Yeah. So. And that's
a realist model for me in some sense, why should I?
Okay. So you have the option, if you'd like, of saying, I want to be a realist, but I happen to think that pure quantum states are complete descriptions of reality. So in my view, You know, this is probably half this kind of reality, probably half that kind of reality. And this guy is probably half this kind of reality and probably half this kind of reality. So they're clearly different distributions over the possible real states. But now you have to say, well, why is it that these two very different states give all the same statistics? So you could say, well, you know, measurements are in quantum theory just can't tell the difference between these two totally different real states of affairs. It's because, you know, the measurements are impoverished. You know, there really is a difference in those things I've prepared. The measurements just can't see it. And that's a logically possible explanation. That's a contextual explanation. So I would draw this as follows. It could be that as I vary a context, I have two very different distributions associated with these two guys. The case where the quantum state's a complete description of reality is just a simple version of that. There would be sort of, you know, a pair of delta function peaks on 0 and 1 here, or a pair of delta function peaks on the plus and the minus state. But, you know, I could imagine any kind of ontic state space in different distributions. But now when somebody says, well, why is it that none of these measurements can see the difference between those two, you'd have to say, ah, well, they're all quite coarse-grained, you know. So although I could imagine a measurement that would see this difference, all the measurements that I can do in nature just can't see the difference. They're all, you know, noisy to some extent. And that's how I explain the fact that these two statistics are similar. Hang on just a sec. Let me just get to the punchline. So that's one explanation, and it's logically consistent. There's not a problem with it. The explanation that a non-contextual hidden variable model would provide is different, though. It says, look, the easiest way to imagine explaining why the statistics of all measurements are the same for this guy and this guy is because the distribution they put out is exactly the same. So then it's clear that, you know, no matter what measurement you do, you're going to see the same statistics because you're sampling a state from exactly the same distribution for those two guys. And so it's a bit of an inference to the best explanation. It seems like a natural place to start. Question at the back.
There is no measurement that can, that allows you to distinguish the two different states?
Yes.
And if you think about measurements just as being like kind of interaction, then like nature is doing measurements all the time.
Yes.
And you cannot distinguish the difference of two states.
Right.
If nature cannot tell the difference between the two states, wouldn't they actually be the same one? There is no way you can distinguish two things.
Right.
That seems like the definition of being equal.
Well, not quite. There's sort of equivalence with respect to, you know, operational procedures in the lab, and then there's equivalence in reality. So equivalence, for example, of the distributions associated with the two. But you can imagine this kind of difference. So, if, you know, if I talked about, did I talk about Plato's cave at some point? No? Oh, gosh. I thought I forget to talk about Plato's cave. Anyhow, this Plato has a story about prisoners trapped in a cave, forced to look at a wall where all they see is shadows of objects that are kind of paraded behind them. So they're sitting looking at this wall, somebody behind them is casting a shadow of an object, there's a light source behind them. And so all they ever see are the shadows, and Plato says, we're like the prisoners. You know, we see these things around us and we think they're reality, but really they're just shadows of the reality. And quantum mechanics is a bit like that. You know, we can see the position shadow or the momentum shadow, but we can't see both. That sort of flavor. So you can imagine in that sort of theory, let's say we're the prisoners in the cave, there could be a difference in the object that's casting the shadow, but the shadow could be the same. So we can imagine the possibility that, you know, two objects might cast all the same shadows and yet be really different. Or at least cast the same shadow from the same angle and yet be different in reality. So
could the two different states evolve in a different way, one from another, that later we could see the shadows like splintered or something like that?
Yeah, you're saying that you would hope that ultimately we could find a way, if there's some distinction between those objects, we could find a way of revealing it. That's the idea.
Not at that point, but a bit later they would interact with something in a different way, so that later if you measure something, you'd be able to distinguish them.
Right. Let me put it this way. The intuition that you're expressing right now is precisely the intuition behind non-contextuality. I like to think of it as a generalization of Einstein's equivalence principle. So Einstein said, look, if there's two scenarios that give the same results for all experiments, then we should assume that in reality they're the same thing. So if you find that accelerating in an elevator in free space is indistinguishable from sitting in that elevator at rest in a gravitational field, then maybe you should assume that being in a gravitational field and accelerating are exactly the same physical state of affairs. And general relativity was an attempt to make those two things, you know, the same ontologically at the real level. So a non-contextual model is a similar spirit. It says, look, these two things are totally indistinguishable from the perspective of future measurements. So let's assume that the reality, which in a hidden variable model means that they're associated with some distribution over physical states, should be the same for the two of them. Because that's the best way of explaining the fact that we can't see the difference between them. Yes?
But if they evolve in different things, then we can measure them, so then contradicts our assumption.
We cannot distinguish.
Well, let's take the quantum example. If I did this kind of preparation or this kind of preparation and left it with this density operator, and then I passed the system out into the world, you could evolve that system all you want. If the laws of quantum mechanics hold, nothing about the evolution of that system will ever reveal which one of these two preparations was done. Basically, the experiments on that system don't contain any information about that difference.
Yeah.
You'd have to go back to the devices themselves and probe them to see
that
difference.
What I mean.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Right. That the assumption that there is no measurement that can distinguish them includes, as a special case, the measurement where I say, let's evolve them for a while and then measure them. That's another effect of measurement. So the possibility of seeing the difference by first evolving is already excluded by saying that there's no measurement that can tell them apart. I see. That's what the point you're trying to make. Does that make sense? Are you happy with that?
Like if you have the cave scenario and you have objects of different color that are cast
right.
in shadows, like you're never, even if they interact
right.
with other objects, you're never going to see what color they are.
Yes, exactly. And actually, I use that very example to try to explain why a lot of physicists don't like hidden variables. And so the way I like to put it is that I think a lot of physicists don't like hidden variables because they think hidden variables are like the color of the objects that are casting the shadows. They make no difference at all. But in fact, typically the hidden variables, like in those theories we saw last week, the Liouville mechanics and these bits, bits where you don't have all the knowledge, it's more like the hidden variables are the shape, and you're restricted in what you can know about the shape by virtue of only being able to know one aspect of it at any given time. But the shape still has explanatory power. You could say all those different shadows that the prisoner sees, the prisoner has a theory which unifies all that. He says, my theory is very simple. I posit that there's a third dimension, and there's a shape, and all these shadows we see are aspects of that one shape. So to my mind, that's good science, and that's why hidden variables can be good science. They can explain a lot of stuff with the simple hypothesis. But you're absolutely right that if instead you're positing hidden variables that are like color, then it doesn't seem to be good science at all because it doesn't have any effect. Contextuality, the fact that quantum theory does not have a non-contextual hidden variable model, sort of means that we're sort of in between those two things, that the hidden variables that we need have a little bit of that color flavor to them. It would have been much nicer if they'd been entirely like the shapes of the object in the cave. But unfortunately, they're not quite like that. So what we're going to need to posit is that when I change context, the distributions are going to have to change in a way that can't be seen by the measurements. So if you think that that's unacceptable, that the methodological principle of equivalence, the analog of Einstein's principle, is really sacrosanct, then you might say, we have to figure out maybe quantum theory breaks down. We have to go beyond quantum theory and find a theory that really admits of a non-contextual model. Or you might say there's something wrong with the framework of realism or, whatever you want. Other questions? Okay, well, I'm glad we got to talk about Plato's cave. I'm sorry for leaving that out up till now. That's a real oversight. Okay, so here's the definition of what I'll call a preparation non-contextual model, because now we're talking about the representation of preparations. So if I have two preparations, P and P prime, and for all measurements they give the same statistics, then they should correspond to the same distribution over the ontic states, or over the hidden variables. That's it. So here's some examples of the distinction. So consider these four quantum states on the block sphere. So this is a quantum example. And remember that if I mix these two, or I mix these two, I get the state at the center of the block sphere. So here's the model we saw last week for representing these quantum states on a discrete phase space. So I've drawn that discrete phase space as just four points on an axis rather than as a 2x2. And the distribution associated with these guys is the uniform over the first two or the second two states, whereas the distributions for these guys is the first and the third or the second and the fourth. But if I take the mixture of these two guys or the mixture of these two guys, I get the same thing. That was how this model explained the fact that these two mixtures don't generate any differences in the future statistics because they're correspond to exactly the same distribution. But here's another model we saw. This was the Cochin-Specker model for two-dimensional Hilbert spaces. And if you'll remember that, the ontic state space was a sphere, and the distribution associated with this quantum state was something that was peaked at the North Pole and dropped off to zero at the equator, and basically like a cosine. And this guy here was peaked at the South Pole, dropped off at the equator, and these guys were the East and the West poles. But now if I mix these two guys, I get something that's doubly lobed at north and south. And if I mix these two guys, I get something that's doubly lobed east and west. And now if you remember how the measurements were modeled in this guy, it was just asking, let's say I measure along the axis M. That measurement just says, am I in the upper hemisphere with respect to that M axis or the lower hemisphere? And it's not hard to convince yourself that if you carve this guy up into two hemispheres and you sum the probability in one hemisphere for this distribution, you get exactly the same thing as for this distribution. So with respect to cutting this sphere into two hemispheres, these two distributions give the same probabilities for every pair of hemispheres. So that's the sense in which if your measurements are too coarse-grained, you might not be able to see the difference between two distributions that are different. And so in this model, you explain the fact that no measurements can tell the difference between this mixture and this mixture as just, well, it's the poverty of the measurements. There's more to know, but for some reason quantum theory doesn't allow us to do measurements to learn those things. And the only measurements we can do don't see the difference. So this kind of model is preparation non-contextual. This is the context, whether I'm preparing this ensemble to make this mixed state or this ensemble to make this mixed state. And it says that here the distribution doesn't depend on which ensemble was used, whereas here the distribution associated with a completely mixed state does depend on which ensemble was used. I assume that's clear? Good. Okay, so let's go on to measurements now. You can do the same thing. You can sort the measurements into equivalence classes. For two measurements to be equivalent means that if I put them up in front of every possible preparation procedure, they give all the same statistics. And so now any differences that remain in how I've done the measurement, which doesn't change which equivalence class it's in, I call a difference of context. Okay, so let's look at some quantum examples. If I do a measurement of this basis in a three-dimensional Hilbert space, or this basis, and I coarse-grain these two outcomes, so I forget whether I got psi 2 or psi 3 in this measurement, I'm just asking psi 1 or not, and here the same thing, I ask psi 1 or not, effectively, I get the same statistics. The probability of outcome psi 1 is the same for all preparations, regardless of whether I measured it in this basis or in this basis. So that's just an example of the kind of thing we saw yesterday. Not yesterday, Friday, sorry. And here's another way of looking at it. The effective measurement for each of those guys is just this projector-valued measure. It's got two outcomes. The first outcome is associated with the projector onto psi 1. The second outcome is associated with the projector onto identity minus psi 1. But there's two ways of decomposing identity minus psi 1 into psi 2 plus psi 3 or psi 2 prime plus psi 3 prime. And so the fact that ultimately psi 2 and psi 3, psi 2 prime and psi 3 prime are both associated with the same projector when I coarse grain them that's what tells me in the quantum formalism that I'm going to get the same statistics for those two kinds of measurements. That's one example. It involves projectors. And in the traditional approach to non-contextuality, there was no no-go theorem for two-dimensional Hilbert spaces. The Bell-Cauchy Speckle theorem applied to three-dimensional Hilbert spaces and greater. And that's because if I have a basis in a two-dimensional Hilbert space and I change it, it has nothing in common with the first basis. In 3D, I could imagine two different bases that have at least an element in common. But in 2D, as soon as I change the basis, it has nothing in common with the first basis. So there's no sense in which I can define something something that stays invariant under that change of measurement. So the question is, how can we overcome that? How can we have a notion of context in 2D? For measurements on a two-dimensional system, how can I imagine two measurements that have something in common but something changing? Yes?
You could not require an orthogonal basis.
Right. You could use a POVM. Is that what you're thinking, or?
Yeah.
Okay. exactly. Yeah. So we saw. Does anybody remember an example from the first week where we saw, in two ways of implementing the same POVM? It was a long time ago. Well, let me break the suspense. Yes, go ahead.
I have just a question about that. Like,
sure.
How can you, like, phi minus the projection on psi 1, that's itself a projection, right?
I minus psi, yes. I didn't say that explicitly, but that itself
is a
projection.
How can you represent a projection with two other projections? Like, if you say that projection is a pure state, how can you hold on to it?
This is a rank 2 projector, so it's not a projector onto a pure state. It's a projector onto a two-dimensional subspace, which in the picture is the projector onto this subspace, which is the same as this subspace. And the point is just that to measure the projector onto that subspace, you could first measure any basis of that subspace, and then just forget which outcome you got. And this corresponds to doing very different things in the lab, but ultimately it doesn't make a difference to the coarse-grained outcome. Okay, so here's an example that we saw in the first week of measuring a noisy spin along this axis.
So one way to measure noisy spin along that axis is to, with some probability, measure the pure measurement for that axis, and with some probability, do the trivial measurement, which just flips a coin and corresponds to identity over 2, comma, identity over 2. So here, the POVM could be E versus identity minus E. And E could be some probability Q times the projector onto the pi by 4 state. So I just mean that the state that's at pi by 4 on this plane of the block sphere. So it could be Q times the pi by 4 state plus 1 minus Q times identity over 2. That's one way to produce that effect. And the other way of measuring the same thing is to choose to do the Z spin measurement or the X spin measurement with equal probability, and then to coarse grain the Z up outcome with the X up outcome to get this outcome. So that way of looking at it is you have probability half of projector onto 0 plus probability half projector onto plus. Turns out that's exactly the same as this guy here. So that's another way of measuring the POVM described by these two black dots. So just like there are multiple ensembles that gave the same mixed state, here there are multiple ways of implementing the same POVM in terms of other POVMs. So this is an example of a change of context. The effective POVM I'm measuring here, E versus identity minus E, gives the same statistics for all preparation procedures. But these correspond to doing two very different things in the lab. Either this axis and the random measurement, or this measurement and that measurement. Okay, so what's a measurement non-contextual model? It's one wherein the response functions that I associate with each of these measurements are the same if they're in the same equivalence class. So again, it's the principle of equivalence. It says if there's no way to distinguish these two measurement procedures operationally, you know, I put them in a black box, you can't tell which one I've put in, then it should be because they're measuring exactly the same properties. They're associated with exactly the same response functions. Whereas a measurement contextual model, which means, you know, this is a model that can be context dependent, you could imagine different response functions for two measurement devices that are in the same equivalence class. So again, this isn't, you know, this is a logically consistent possibility. You could just say, well, if I could do arbitrary, if I could prepare arbitrary distributions over the hidden variables, then clearly I could see the difference between these. Like if I prepared a distribution that was narrowly peaked around this region here, I could clearly see that the probability for outcome one would change. But it might be that nature just doesn't provide me with any preparation procedure that provides sufficiently narrow distributions over lambda to be able to see that difference. Maybe all my distributions over lambda are very smeared out, and these kinds of differences are not observable. OK, so that's non-contextuality for preparations. In this general approach, if you believe in one, then you should believe in the other, because it's the same methodological principle for both. So the natural assumption to make is what I'll call universal non-contextuality, which is non-contextuality for both the preparations and the measurements. And it turns out that you can make sense of this notion in quantum theory. So this should be obvious by now. So preparation non-contextuality in quantum theory is just that if two preparation procedures associated with the same density operator, then they should be represented by the same distribution, which is another way of saying that the distribution depends only on the density operator, not, for example, on the ensemble that was used to build the density operator or the entangled state from which the density operator was obtained as a reduced state. It should depend only on the density operator. And for measurements, if I have two procedures that correspond to the same POVM, then they should be represented by the same sets of indicator functions, which means that the indicator function for outcome K should depend only on the POVM element associated with that outcome and not on how the measurement was implemented. All right, and now I can show you why quantum theory fails to admit of these kinds of non-contextual hidden variable models. So I tried to motivate why they were natural by this kind of equivalence principle, but you know, the verdict is that we can't have this in quantum theory. So you know, Bell's notion of local causality was also a very natural notion, especially given special relativity, and we couldn't have it in quantum theory. And similarly, we can't have this notion of non-contextuality to explain the quantum predictions either. So I'll start with a proof that you can't, that's based on preparations. So it's basically going to use preparation non-contextuality as an assumption, and it's going to drive a contradiction. So it proves the impossibility of a non-contextual hidden variable model of quantum theory. All right, so before I tell you how the proof works, I have to just point out a couple of facts that are true of all hidden variable models, regardless of whether they're contextual or not. So suppose that mu is the distribution associated with P, and mu prime is the distribution associated with P prime. These are preparations. Suppose you find that P and P prime are distinguishable with certainty in a one-shot measurement. So there's some measurement I can do such that if I have prepared a system using preparation P or P prime, I can give that system to you, you do the measurement, and you can figure out whether it was P or P prime. You don't need a large number of copies of the system, you just need one copy, and you'll be able to figure it out. So that's like, you know, if I prepare Z up, that's P, and Z down, that's P prime, then you can do a Z measurement to figure out which of the two it was in one shot. The way you're going to have to represent these in a hidden variable model is by distributions that don't overlap at all. Because if the distributions overlapped, then that would mean you're sampling the physical state that comes out of the apparatus, the preparation apparatus, from this distribution, or you're sampling it from this distribution. And then some of the time, you'll be sampling it from this region here. And then clearly, no matter which measurement you did, you'd be unable to tell whether it'd come from one distribution or the other, because it's consistent with both. So it means that you'll have to associate those two preparations with disjoint distributions. So this assumption is critical for the proof. Does anyone object to it? Does it seem reasonable? Because if this assumption is unreasonable, then maybe we could salvage the assumption of non-contextuality. no objections. Good. Second assumption is how to represent mixtures. So how to represent convex combinations of different procedures. We've seen things like this in the first week. So if P double prime is a new preparation procedure that corresponds to either doing P or P prime with probability little p and probability 1 minus p, then how should I represent the distribution associated with P prime in a hidden variable model? Well, if you just think about the interpretation of this, it's obvious, right? This is the probability of prepared ontic state lambda given that P double prime was done. Well, P double prime just means doing this or that, so it has to be the probability of preparing lambda given P times the probability of doing P plus the probability of preparing lambda given P prime times the probability of actually implementing P prime. So it has to be the same convex combination of the distributions. Does everybody think that's reasonable? I should mention there is a way of denying this. You could say, how to represent capital P and capital P prime actually changes if I've just done them or proceeded doing them with flipping a coin. You know, that's different, right? I flipped a coin and then I did preparation P. Well, maybe that makes a difference to how the hidden variables come out for preparation P. But you could always say, well, that would be a kind of contextuality, a kind of context dependence, because the statistics I see in measurements for preparation capital P don't depend on whether I first flipped a coin and then done it or just done it, right? So the assumption that this mu should be the same regardless of whether it's preceded by coin flips and stuff is just another kind of non-contextuality. So these, I would say, are reasonable. You have to grant these. So if we get a contradiction, it's probably because of the non-contextuality or something in the whole framework. All right, so how do we derive the contradiction? So this is a proof in two dimensions. It uses these six quantum states here, three orthogonal pairs. So psi little a is orthogonal to psi big a. Similarly with big b, big b, little b, big b, and so on. So there's six preparation procedures I'm imagining corresponding to preparing these six quantum states. Now it's useful to write these down as density operators. I'll show you why in a moment. But if I just rewrite all of this in terms of density operators, this is what it looks like. So this is just the density operator associated with the z spin-up state, and so on. And now the orthogonality relations can be represented as products. If I take a density operator for little a and the density operator for big a, those states are orthogonal. It means the product is zero. OK, so now here's the key thing, that these orthogonal preparations are distinguishable with certainty in a one-shot measurement, right? So like the z spin up, z spin down states are distinguishable by a measurement of z spin. And so I just argued in the last slide that means that the distributions associated with them have to be non-overlapping. So at every lambda, the product has to be zero. So these three relations are sort of mirroring the relations that hold them on the density operators. So any hidden variable model will have to have these hold. And then the next step is to define five more preparation procedures as mixtures of the six we already have. So, mix little a and big A, mix little b and big b, and so on, right? So these are the mixtures of the two orthogonal states. And then there's two more, one which mixes the three small letter preparations with equal probabilities, and one which mixes the other three. And clearly, in the hidden variable model, there'll have to be a distribution representing every one of those new preparation procedures. So here they are. And because two slides ago I argued that convex combinations of preparations yield the same convex combination of the distributions, this is the relations that should hold for each of these guys. OK, so that is basically paralleling what happens for the quantum states. Because if I look in a plane of the Bloch sphere and I take an equal mixture of these two guys, I get the complete mixed state. But that's true for any equal mixture of two orthogonal states. So all three of these guys are the complete mixed state. But if I mix this guy, and this guy with equal probability, I also get the complete mixed state just by symmetry. And similarly for these three. So each one of these convex combinations gives the complete mixed state. And that means that these five preparations I've defined are operationally equivalent. There's no measurement that can tell the difference between whether you prepared the complete mixed state by this ensemble or by this ensemble or any other one. So it means that if I put one of these five preparations in a black box, passed it over to you, you couldn't tell from any measurement. And that's what we need to have some non-trivial consequences from the assumption of preparation non-contextuality. The consequence is that these distributions, these five distributions I assigned to the different mixtures, should all be the same. Because that's what preparation non-contextuality says. Operational equivalence should mean equivalence in how they're represented in the hidden variable model. So it says that rather than having, you know, five different left-hand sides, all these different mixtures of hidden variable distributions should be the same. So now this relationship among the density operators is also paralleled in the relationships between the distributions in the hidden variable model. Okay, so what's the task? If there's a preparation non-contextual hidden variable model, then it means that I should be able to find seven different distributions such that these orthogonal pairs are all disjoint and such that these mixtures come out to be the same thing here. And that's the analog of what happens for the density operators. But now, whereas these things were positive matrices, these are not matrices. These are just distributions. And so it's conceivable although I can find matrices that satisfy these relations, I might not be able to find positive distributions that do. And it turns out there aren't a set of six positive distributions that are normalized to one which satisfy these relations. And so we're going to get a contradiction. So that's all I have to do now is show you that there's nothing that can satisfy all these relations. Okay, so take a particular ontic state that's assigned non-zero probability by this distribution nu. Okay? There has to be one because this is a normalized distribution. Now, if you look at this relation here, in every region of the ontic state space, either this guy's positive or this guy's positive. They can't both be, right? So there's some region where this guy's zero and this one's positive, and some region where this one's positive and this one's zero. So mu little a at lambda prime is either zero, or it has the value 2 times nu, because in that region, mu capital A will be zero, and then this equation will tell me that mu little a is twice nu. Okay, so I get that mu little a is zero or twice nu. And similarly, I can make the same argument for mu little b and mu little c. Okay, and now if I look at this fourth relation here, that nu is a sum of each of these guys, and now I plug in on the right-hand side the possible values for these three guys. So all three of them could be zero. That would say this, this, and this was zero. And that would contradict the fact that I'd taken a lambda prime where nu was not equal to zero. So I can't have all three of them be zero. So consider the next possibility. Say one of them is twice nu and the other two are zero. Then I'll get 2/3 nu on the right-hand side. But that's still not equal to the left-hand side, which is nu. And similarly, if I put two of them to be non-zero, I'll get 4/3 nu. And if I put all three of them to be non-zero, I get twice nu. But none of these things give me nu. And so for every case, I get a contradiction. And these relations can't be satisfied. OK, so I hope you're convinced that you can't have a preparation non-contextual hidden variable model. A couple of comments. One thing is that you can sometimes justify this assumption by local causality. So I think it's surprising enough on its own. It's sort of an assumption that had some merit. But if you think that local causality is a more interesting assumption, then there are some proofs wherein every assumption of preparation non-contextuality can be justified by local causality. This isn't one of them, but some of the assumptions of non-contextuality in this proof can be justified by local causality. So here's how you do it. Basically, you imagine that now you've prepared two systems that are entangled. Okay, and if I want to prepare in this system the ensemble corresponding to Z spin up and Z spin down with equal probabilities, then I can measure Z spin on this. And I'll collapse the distance system to Z up or Z down. If I measure a different angle here, I'll collapse the distance system to that other ensemble. So by doing measurements along these axes with the entangled partner, I can collapse to each of these ensembles. And if on the distant partner I do a POVM whose three elements correspond to these three states, so two-thirds times this projector, two-thirds times this, and two-thirds times that, then I'll collapse the distant system to these three states. So I can also prepare that ensemble. So I can prepare any one of these five ensembles by doing five different measurements over here. And local causality says, well, if you do a measurement here and you don't condition on the outcome, well, clearly, things over here can't change. So the overall distribution on the far side should be independent of which measurement was done here. So it should be independent, you know, so it should mean that the distribution for each of these ensembles should be the same. So you can justify the quality of these guys by saying that the overall distribution should not depend on what you chose to measure far away. Okay, so that's just an interesting connection between this new generalized notion of non-contextuality and local causality. One other thing I can say is that I won't prove it for you, but if you take any proof of non-locality, you can turn it into a proof of preparation contextuality, which means a proof of the impossibility of a preparation non-contextual model in the kind of way that we just saw. So just as last time we saw how proofs of Bell's theorem were particular instances of dependence on a distant context, this is, you know, that kind of dependence can also be understood as a kind of context dependence for the preparations. Okay, so last topic is measurement contextuality. How do we compare the new definition from the one we saw last time? How has it changed? So I'm just going to remind you what the definition was last time. I give you like four or five definitions. This was the first one. It said if I have two bases that have some element in common, then I should represent those by sets of response functions which are the same for the first basis element. And it could just be that the choice of how to resolve this 2D subspace corresponds to a difference in how to carve up the rest of the space. So let me just point out that this is totally equivalent to assuming the following, that if I 2 the measurement which measures the first basis and then coarse grains these two outcomes, so that's the measurement associated with these two projectors, or I do the measurement which measures this basis and then coarse grains these two outcomes. This is psi 2 prime and psi 3 prime. That's the same thing. Then the traditional assumption of non-contextuality is that's represented by the same set of response functions, which just means that if I summed up the way of representing psi 2 and psi 3, I get exactly the same response function for both. So it's an equivalent way of describing that traditional assumption. But here's the difference, that the most general representation of a measurement was in terms of response functions that didn't need to be deterministic. They didn't need to always give answers 1 or 0 for every lambda. So therefore, the traditional notion is not equivalent to the revised notion. It's equivalent to the revised notion together with an extra assumption, which is that these projective measurements should have deterministic outcomes. So in that sense, it's not just a generalization, it's actually a revision of the traditional notion, something that the traditional notion assumed is not being assumed in this new notion. And the argument for why this is better than the traditional notion is that non-contextuality and determinism are different issues, and we shouldn't conflate them, and we shouldn't put them both under one heading. So the analogy is that I described how John Bell had two notions. One was called local determinism, and the other was called local causality. Local determinism was a question of whether the outcome of a measurement depends on space-like separated events, in addition to depending on the local settings of the device and the hidden variables. So that was the one where I just had the single space-time diagram, and I asked, you know, what do the events in the top region, do they depend on everything in the backward light cone or not? And Bell's concern was that didn't allow for the possibility of objective indeterminism in the world, that, you know, maybe I could have only probabilities of events, and I want to make sure that those probabilities don't depend on space-like separated events. So he upgraded the notion to say, does the probability of the outcome depend on space-like separated events, rather than does the outcome itself depend on those events? And so the same thing is happening in the generalization of the traditional notion to the new notion. The traditional notion asked whether the outcome depended on the measurement context, rather than just depending on the equivalence class of the measurement and on the hidden variables. And the revised notion asks whether the probability of the outcome depends on the measurement context, because it allows the indicator functions to give probabilistic outcomes for the measurement. Okay. So the situation then is that the no-go theorems for the traditional notion, and we saw several of those on Friday, are not necessarily no-go theorems for the new notion, because in the face of a contradiction, you could always give up this assumption of determinism. So that would appear to be good news for non-contextuality. You know, maybe we can really have it in measurements. But unfortunately, you can't. The situation is as follows. If you assume universal non-contextuality for preparations and measurements, then the non-contextuality for preparations can be used to derive this assumption of outcome determinism. And therefore, let me skip the argument and just tell you what the conclusion is going to be. Maybe I'll come back to the argument. Therefore, if you assume both of these guys, then you can justify measurement non-contextuality and this assumption of outcome determinism for projective measurements. And that's just the traditional notion. So you can actually justify the traditional notion from the generalized notion, but you have to use measurements and preparations. And therefore, any no-go theorem for the traditional notion is also a no-go theorem for having both of these assumptions true. So let's see, we have just a few minutes left. Do you want to see the proof of this? Does anyone care? let me skip the proof of that and then just give you one more proof of the impossibility of a non-contextual hidden variable model, this time using POVMs. So this will be an extension of the Cauchy-Specker theorem to a two-dimensional Hilbert space. It'll talk about how you represent measurements. And then we'll stop. Okay. So it's going to be a very similar geometry to the proof I just showed you, except now, so I'm using the same points on the block sphere. Now I'm going to be thinking about the measurements. So I'm not going to be thinking about them as preparation procedures, but as three possible measurements along these three different bases. So I'll call the measurements MA, MB, and MC. And pi sub x just projects onto the state psi sub x. So pi sub A is the projector onto this state. So I know because these are projector-valued measures that these two projections have to sum to identity, similarly for the others. And they're orthogonal, which in this language means the product is zero. So how do I represent those in the hidden variable model? Each of these measurements is given by a response function. I'll call those chi sub A of lambda and so on. And response functions have to sum to one at every value of lambda, because the first response function tells me the probability of getting outcome little a. The second tells me the probability of getting outcome big A. There's only two outcomes. So at every value of lambda, those probabilities have to sum to one. So this is just what it means to be a measurement. And then because I have outcome determinism for projective measurements, I know that the product of these two guys has to be zero, because now I'm assuming that there's no way for these response functions to be indeterministic, right? They're either zero or one at every value of lambda. And so this is the argument I skipped, but if you assume preparation non-contextuality, then at least for projective measurements, you have to have that. So we have relations for the response functions that look just like the relations that have to hold for the corresponding projectors. And we also have that each of these response functions is either 0, 1, or 1, 0 at every value of lambda. Okay, so far there have been no POVMs. But now I'm going to introduce another measurement, which will be represented by a POVM. So here it is. It's an effective measurement in terms of the ones I've defined. So choose one of these three measurements uniformly at random, probability third each. And then coarse grain over whether you have the first outcome of the measurement or the second outcome. So all this measurement registers is which outcome of these measurements occurred, but not which of the three measurements happened. So in quantum mechanics, you would represent that by the following POVM. It's a two-element POVM because it's, the measurement has two outcomes. And the first is a coarse graining of all the ways of getting the small letter outcome. And the second is a coarse graining of all the ways of getting the big letter outcome. You know, you can think of this as if I rolled my three-sided dice with uniform probabilities to decide whether to do one of these three measurements. So I kept track of the outcome of my random choice and which measurement was done. Then it would be a six-outcome measurement. And each of the outcomes would be a third times one of these projectors. But then the coarse graining would basically lump these three guys together and lump those three guys together. So that's why it looks like this. Good. And then the similar argument will show that the way you represent it in the hidden variable model is the same convex combination of those response functions. Okay. Now here's the interesting thing, that if you sum up these three projectors, because of symmetry, they give me a half identity. So this measurement is associated with the POVM identity over 2, identity over 2. Now, what's another way of measuring that POVM? Oh, no, yes. Yeah, exactly. So we talked about this in week one, that if I look at the probability of those two outcomes for any preparation procedure, any row, it always says that the probability of the two outcomes are half-half, regardless of what you did ahead of time. So one way to implement a measurement is you let the system crash into a brick, or you throw it in the garbage, and you just flip a fair coin. And then the outcomes of that, it doesn't sound much like a measurement because it doesn't depend at all on the properties of the system. But, technically it's still a POVM. We can call it a measurement. And it certainly is represented by this pair of operators. So let me call that M tilde. Ignore the system, flip a fair coin. In quantum mechanics, we represent that by exactly the same POVM. But now you can ask, well, how would you represent this in the hidden variable model? Okay, so the hidden variable model says for each outcome, I have a conditional probability. For every physical state of the system, I have a probability of getting outcome 1. So what are the response functions for this measurement? Constant equal to a half. Exactly. So I haven't drawn it, but I've just written a half. So think of this as a constant function over lambda. No matter what the physical state is, you have equal probabilities of getting the two outcomes. So it's just this. All right, and so now we make the assumption of measurement non-contextuality. It says, look, these two measurements, although very different, one of them ignores the system, the other one subjects the system to one of three different possible measurements at random. Because there's no preparation that gives different statistics for these two measurements, they should be represented the same way. So this pair of response functions should be equal to the pair a half. Okay, but now we can get our contradiction, because chi little a, chi little b, and chi little c represented projective measurements at every lambda. They should take value 0 or 1. So if all three of them are 0, then I get that this pair is just 0, 1. If one of them is 0, I get that it's a third, 2/3. If they're all 1, I get 1, 0. If two of them are 1, I get 2/3, 1/3. But in no case do I get this equal to a half. So it's not possible to represent these measurements in a way that is context independent. Even though I can't tell the difference between these two measurements, it has to be that a hidden variable model represents them differently. Good. So let me end with this slide. Why is this mysterious? I think in the case of Bell's theorem, it was sort of clear what the mystery was. There was a tension between special relativity, which suggests that local causality is something that's true of the world, and the quantum predictions. Here, there's a similar tension between the fact that the dependence in your hidden variable model on certain details of the experimental procedure that's entailed by contextuality, right? We saw that the way I represent things in hidden variable models is going to have to depend on features of the experimental procedure that don't make a difference to the statistics. So this dependence of representation versus the independence of the statistics is a bit of a mystery. You know, why should it be that there's no measurement that tells the difference between two preparation procedures if they really correspond to different distributions? It seems like it would be a conspiratorial universe if there were such differences that we couldn't see operationally. So if it troubles you, then either you have to reject realism, or maybe reject some aspect of the realist framework, or maybe just embrace the context dependence that you have to have in variable models. But the bottom line is that you cannot have non-contextuality. So let's end there.
By the way, guys, today there will be tutorial at 3 on condition, because you guys didn't have a tutorial on Friday, so we didn't have the.
It's the one you gave us on Friday.
Yeah, yeah.
But we haven't done it now.
Sorry?
We haven't done it now.